So when I came here, I was studying medicine and I basically ran away from home. I was all by myself. I spoke a little bit of English and I landed there in Perth. I started university straight away. I knew that I wanted to continue to study something in science, but I also knew I didn't want to be a doctor. First, I started medicine and then I finished a science degree and I did an MBA. So that's my study journey that ultimately led me to the career. But I have been a venture investor all my life. Like, I probably invested maybe 70 or 80 companies during my journey. Yep. So I've always had an intense interest in early stage companies, entrepreneurial people funding these businesses. So Stride is a venture-backed equity crowdfunding platform. After, you know, myself and my partners having 30 plus years experience in investing in early stage companies, we have come up with a criteria that we think works for us. It's always the founder that we look at first. Founder who is solving a real problem, not trying to sell a product or some idea, addressing a real market that exists there and with a product or service that people are prepared to pay for and has the stamina and the perseverance to make it happen. All the solutions that we'll see for a world's problems don't even exist yet, and we just have to find them. And some of the people that might be listening to this podcast be the people who create those solutions. We just have to keep pushing forward.
Maria, we are here. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. How are you, Brett?
Very good. I've been excited about this. We just had a bit of a laugh about, you know, showing up well. Thankfully, the podcast, most people listen, so they don't need to worry about how ugly I am. We're doing okay.
I think we'll be fine.
We'll be fine. But no, today, super excited. There's probably a few things we're going to explore, but, you know, for anyone that hasn't clicked into the show notes and had a little stalk about you, Maria, There's a lot to say about your careers, a lot to say about Stride Equity and the business you're growing and building very successfully, and broadly a lot of learning I think that we can get from your philosophy on life and career and building as an entrepreneur. There are lots of entrepreneurs you deal with on a day-to-day basis, and a big part of our audience are business owners, entrepreneurs, and people having a crack, doing their best to build something that's important for them and their family and the legacy they want to leave. So I think we'll get some value out of today from you, but no pressure.
I hope so. Now that you're saying.
Well, we were talking before this and you know, I think before we start getting into the mechanics of Stride and different parts of your life, I'd love to hear about how you landed here in Australia. And I love that story we talked about with your family thinking you'd be the prime minister. So there were high expectations in your family. So I'd love to sort of hear about the essence of Maria. If you could paint a bit of that story, it'd be great to start there.
Yeah, so I got to Australia when I was 19. I came by myself and I came as a political refugee with $50 in my pocket. So that's where I started in Australia. But of course, talking about prime minister, obviously I was a little bit of a smart ass, to be quite honest, growing up, and very vocal about certain things and a bit of a person from the moon, didn't really fit into the family. And so for some reason, they thought that at a minimum, I could make it to prime ministership. So very disappointingly, I didn't get there.
Oh, well, you've had a go at getting to the moon, though, clearly.
Oh, absolutely. Almost. Halfway there.
Well, you know, part of the reason I brought that up nice and early, you know, this uniqueness that you had and maybe the reputation you had in your family. So I think it takes a lot to do some of the things that you do and the career you've had. Tell us about, you know, $50 in the back pocket, you know, to then move into, you know, this biotech career, into corporate finance, into this very sophisticated world. Well, how does that happen for Maria? Tell us a bit about the journey.
Well, I have to step back a few years, but I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Just because it helps us understand a little bit of the now, I think.
So when I came here, I was studying medicine. Mm-hmm. I was in third year and I basically ran away from home. So when I arrived here, I knew that I wanted to continue to study something in science, but I also knew I didn't want to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the motivator to get into science at the time. And actually, first I started medicine and then I finished a science degree and I did an MBA. So that's my study journey that ultimately led me to the career. About the $50, I mean, that's frankly what I had in my pocket when I arrived. I was all by myself. I spoke a little bit of English and I landed there in Perth in the Greylands Immigration Center at 2 a.m. on the 9th of October. And my winter coat, and as you can imagine in Perth in October, it's quite warm.
Yeah, totally. You'd be taking that off quickly.
So I took that off fairly quickly and, you know, I had to adjust. But when you're 19, it's not that difficult to adjust. And, you know, particularly I started university straight away. I went to the, you know, admin department, met some amazing people, including a wonderful law professor, András Domahedy, who was Hungarian. And he basically mentored me through the application process. So I was able to transfer quite a bit of what I was studying before. So I just was really, really fortunate. I landed in Australia without anything really. And I just found myself surrounded by these amazing people who were ready to help. And I think that's how I got on that path.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure this is going to feature a few times because you've had some mentors along the way. We'll unpack that. So let's fast forward to now, because I think this helps people understand that you've come from an interesting starting point in your life in Australia, and there's been a lot of learning along the way. But where are we today? Let's talk about Maria today and Stride.
So Stride is a venture-backed equity crowdfunding platform, and it is a little bit different to what I have been doing most recently. Mm. I've been running a listed company, a biotechnology company that we've pivoted into consumer health, and that was for 15 years. Mm. And that really is a combination of my biotechnology, human biology, scientific kind of background, plus the finance background, because I was coming from an investment banking background, clearly focused on funding these biotech life science companies. So that was a combination of that. And then when I left that role as CEO of a public company, you know, after 15 years, you can't help but, you know, be burnt out. Mm. The 24/7, the constant attention on what you're doing. Mm. And also it's an incredibly lonely job. You really can't share with your employees. You can't share with your board really, because, I mean, you have to share everything with the board, but, you know, you have to go in there from a position of solution. Mm. And so there's a lot of responsibility, a lot of stress. And whilst I loved it and I didn't realize that I was burnt out, but when I stopped, it was like an enormous rock fell off my shoulders. You know, I just felt really good. And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And so I connected with my old bosses back from investment banking days. And they said, oh, we're looking at community funding. We think the future is really in community funding of startups. And there's this platform called crowdfunding platforms. And we actually registered one. We've got one of the licenses, but we're not quite sure how to launch it and what to do with it. So I had a look at that entire venture market and, you know, how companies get funded, early stage companies. And of course, I was a little bit out of that for a while. Mm-hmm. But I have been a venture investor all my life. Like I probably invested maybe 70 or 80 companies during my journey.
Yeah, wow.
So I've always had an intense interest in early stage companies, entrepreneurial people funding these businesses. Mm. And of course, along the path, I've learned how to fund them from a venture to investment banking through to listed markets kind of journey. So I thought there's a real opportunity to do it differently. Mm. And to do it in a way where we put together all our knowledge around how to invest, what a good company is like, make sure that retail investors' money, I mean, retail investors don't specialize in an area per se. Mm. So what we wanted to make sure that when they invest in any of the companies that are on our platform or we back, is going to have a really good chance of succeeding. Mm. And so I went to my partners and I said, look, you know, if you're happy with me doing this with this really valuable platform that you've built, then I'm very happy to join and make it happen. So I have an amazing chief operating officer. He's, you know, totally digitally at home with everything we do. You know, obviously I've got a little bit of a background in digital marketing myself with consumer health. So we've put together and branded the business exactly for what it is. We've come out and saying exactly what we're doing. Mm. And it really had traction enough so that we've been able to do a very successful transaction late last year. We only launched middle of last year.
Wow.
I've done a really successful transaction late last year. We're in the middle of two other transactions right now. So we're building it slowly. We want to make sure, we see hundreds of companies. Mm. But we just want to make sure that once we back them, we can stand behind them, put our own money behind them, and we can say, okay, well, we think these people are going to make this work. And there's a real chance of this to succeed. And so that's where we are right now. And the thing that we've seen, though, and I've just mentioned that we've seen hundreds of companies, mm-hmm. is that the founders come to us for money. But very often, the problem isn't the money. That they still need to understand two things. One is to become investable, and the other is how to raise money.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I unpack that?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So Maria, it's interesting because we came from a weight off your shoulders to a place where we're talking about people solving the right problem. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of business people do have that stress that comes with at that early stage of their business of not knowing, often just so many moving parts and that sense of overwhelm. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got to do this now. I've got to get money. And there's this narrative out there of hustle and all of that other stuff. And at some point, the money needs to be there as well, right? So if you can help simplify what you're seeing a lot, right, from the hundreds of companies you've looked at and those that you've invested in as well. What are the common symptoms of both a high performing founder and I guess high potential organization that you would back versus those that you're saying you're not quite ready?
So for us, and this is very individual to our platform, mm-hmm. this is not a VC set of criteria that I'm giving you, because VC is a very, very small percentage of funding that gets into startups. Mm. It's got incredible big profile because there's some very large individuals waving it around. Plus, they've got a lot of our money, all our super money, a lot of our super money goes into that. Yes. So, of course, it's rightfully, it has a profile that we need to
be able to. A more mature profile and more developed profile.
Exactly. Yes. But from a Stride perspective, After myself and my partners having 30 plus years experience in investing in early stage companies, we have come up with a criteria that we think works for us. And that is, it's always the founder that we look at first. And what I mean here is a founder who has done something before, tried really hard, worked at it, may have failed, but learned the lessons. And what he's doing now is solving a real problem, not trying to sell a product or some idea, solving a real problem, addressing a real market that exists there, and with a product or service that people are prepared to pay for, and has the stamina and the perseverance to make it happen. Yeah. So it all starts to us, for us, at the founder, and we do spend time with the founders to understand their thinking. 100% of the time, startups are not perfect. Mm. They will miss something really important. But can it be replaced, supplemented, assisted? And if it can be, and all the other important components are in place, they've got a chance of funding.
Mm, okay. So we'll go a little bit deeper. So we heard founder, and specifically that they've learned that they have... You use the word stamina, so I'll unpack that a little bit. And then on the other side, you were sort of saying a problem that's being solved. I know where we're going with this, but I do think it's important just to be specific versus something that's sold or an idea. Can we start there if that's okay? Because I'm very passionate about this. Yeah. So when you say there's a problem that's being solved versus an idea that's being sold, how do you differentiate, and then how do you break that down and know whether that problem is real or this is just some idea?
Look, sometimes it's harder to know and other times it's easier to know. And I give you an example that's not our investment example, but it took me some time to understand the Afterpay problem.
Mm.
And because I'm not the market, I don't understand. And it I didn't understand why people would not want to just pay for it and walk away because I forget to, you know, like it's a different.
And it wasn't your problem either.
It wasn't my problem.
Yeah.
So that just because it's not my problem doesn't mean I wouldn't understand. But that in that case, it took me some time. And when I got it, I mean, how brilliant it was. Like absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
We didn't even know we had that problem. But we actually do. How much easier it is. If you can pay in 4 weeks' time, why would you pay now? Like it's like, so sometimes it takes some, you know, a maturation of the thinking to get to a solution. And we're not perfect in that either.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, the idea that someone has at some point is a theory because it needs to be validated at some point. So they've got to have that idea. And you're saying to push that into the market to test that that problem even is real. And that there's a psychology that the buyer is prepared to lean into seeing that as a real problem.
So I'll give you another example. Mm. The other example is a deal that we're doing now.
Mm.
And that is a deposit lending for home buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not telling you anything that there is an entire crisis situation out there where people can't get into homes. And because in Australia, we've got such a deep emotional desire to own our own home. That is a societal problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's not one solution for it because different people, there's niche solutions for everything. But we're working with a founder right now who's identified a particular niche audience for his for audience that has a very specific way of wanting to get into the property market. And that is they're high earners, high income earners, young, 25 to 35. They don't want to wait the 10 to 12 years to save up for a deposit.
Mm.
So what he's saying, okay, well, why don't we share equity? You don't put any money down. We put it all in. We get the mortgage for you. We make sure that we put you in a property that is going to go up in value because it's in the right area and the right region and within the right distance from a center. It's not a unit, but it's got land. All those really wonderful things that kind of gives you some certainty around value increase. And let's support you for 5 years. And after 5 years, you refinance it, you pay us out, and you go off. And instead of having to have paid rent for 5 years, not owning anything. You don't have to pay. You'd be living in your own. You're paying obviously your mortgage, but you don't have to pay rent.
Mm. And you've got an asset that's grown in value.
At the end, you're going to have a net asset coming out of it.
Mm.
So, you know, it's quite clearly a real problem, but you can't solve everybody's problem because this problem is just way too big.
Mm.
For one company, one startup to solve. So very cleverly, he went after a very niche audience, defined the parameters of that problem.
A niche, but still very large audience.
It's huge.
Yes.
It's thousands and thousands of people.
Yes.
I mean, writing 100 of these loans, 100 of these loans is $50 million a year. You know, he only needs to write 100 or 200 loans and he's got a huge business. But it's still niche because it's not the 50,000 people in Australia who earn over $180,000, you know, of which, you know, 40% of them don't have a home. So look, it's still a big problem, but it's still niche. Mm. It's very well defined, very clear. So also this is a founder this is his third very successful business that he started.
Oh, so we got to go there. Yeah.
So when everything falls into place like this, it's kind of a nice thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
That would be another example where I think the problem is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But the solution is not that obvious.
The solution's not that obvious. Yes, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, the piece we often talk about with entrepreneurs on this podcast often is that there's a trend that is so consistent that there's a human need in it somewhere. The human being wants to attach themselves to a problem.
Totally.
And you talked about it there, there's status, there's, you know, the attachment to and the emotional attachment to owning a home, all those sorts of things. So just on that example, if we can, and I don't know the founder, but and I don't want to pick on them either, but there's clearly something you've seen in them. You've said there's been three successful stories before this. But let's, if you don't mind going under the hood a little bit and talking about character, talking about that word stamina you talked about before, what do you notice in that person or others of a similar nature? What are the specific things that you look for?
I think resilience is so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be smart, great communicator. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to bring an audience with you, because no matter how good your solution is, if you can't tell people and they don't believe you, it's not going to work. In this case, Nir, who is the founder, is just a genuinely authentic, honest, positive, good person. And you get that feeling from when you meet him, that he's genuinely interested in you, and he's genuinely interested in helping you. He's mature enough to understand how to deliver that solution, because he's done it before.
Been there before, yeah.
Not, but it doesn't have to be someone who's already done, you know, three different things successfully. Mm. It can be a young person who can demonstrate that they've tried something, they persisted, and that even if they failed, they've learned something out of it, and now they're ready to do something completely different. And we're seeing more of that, than near my home deposit lending business owner.
Yes.
So we're seeing a lot more young entrepreneurs, amazing ideas. A lot of them are not real solutions to real problems. A lot of them are, you know, trying to create a problem to solve it so that they can fit their solution into it. Mm-hmm. But also, you don't always know that, particularly when it comes to technology.
Mm. We were talking before, myself and Claire, and we were talking about Duolingo, which is a massive, right? And
I know.
And they've got their little character. And you know, you'd often think, well, the type of engagement with this little puppet, you know, no one would have picked that potentially in terms of its capacity to drive market expansion. So we always try to outsmart, you know, how we, you know, but from an investment point of view, you know, it's really important that you can size that up. And so this is this idea of the intangible of the founder. Obviously, you're going out to retail investors through the platform. How does the platform, just out of curiosity, showcase the founder? Or how do people get the chance to understand that founder and what you just described? Because as for me at home, I may not be able to get that essence that that you get as an individual who's had so much time with them.
So we make them to stand in front of a camera and tell their story, and that's on our website.
Yeah, nice.
So when you go on the, we call it the expression of interest page, which is the first time you see about an offer that we've got for community investors out there, they'll see a video link. And in that 2 or 3 minute video, the owner has to say who they are, what they're doing, and why they're doing it. You know, you can do that on our website and check him out. But, you know, he comes across, and he is genuine and authentic, kind, caring, good person who's very, very competent and, you know, obviously has delivered great businesses. But that's what you do. You put them in a position where they can showcase who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Q&A opportunities.
Absolutely. So we do run webinars. We ran one last week, and, as you can imagine, a very large number of questions.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And the other thing with this particular project, which is amazing, and, you know, it just breaks your heart in some ways, because there's so many people come in and say, I want that deposit loan now. Can you issue me the deposit loan?
Give me the solution. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we, you know, on a daily basis, we have people, you know, contacting us, when is it going to be available?
It's nice, there's demand, clearly.
Yeah. So I think, you know, our original idea is probably there isn't any demand is obviously being validated. Yeah,
it's being validated quickly. It's amazing. So, you know, you've seen a lot there, right? And it will stay in this zone of startup founders.
Not that much.
Well, I've got a few, but
fair enough.
You're not overdone yet, though. You're not overcooked, Maria. But I do value that. You know, you certainly, this space is where you're immersing yourself right now in your life, particularly in your career. And I do want to stay here a little bit, because there's a lot of people that will, you know, value your thoughts around this. Now, I know one of the things you are doing is looking at investor readiness. Now, part of it, I think to some degree, you've already solved it to us. You know, you're saying, okay, great. Well, you've got to solve a problem, and you've got to be someone that actually demonstrates that they understand how to bounce back, but ultimately hold your ability to build a team that can bring this thing to life and run a business ultimately. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at this investor readiness idea, and I think you're doing some work with Tankstream on this, what are some of the big things that people would learn or get exposure to from that?
So look, we had that conversation with Brad at Tankstream Labs, and where he is he's seeing all these companies as well, their members that want to raise money, and they're just a leap away from where they can. And so we had that conversation, and we thought it would be a great idea to put together a short program where we could get founders and take them on that journey, which is founders are very good at what they do, but we don't know what we don't know. Mm. And it's hard for them to appreciate that raising capital is a complex art and science. Mm. It takes time. It's all encompassing. So we put together an 8-week course, essentially. Every week, there's just the content is about an hour and a half. It's hybrid, so it's, we do a couple of sessions in person, but by and large, it's on Zoom. And we'll take them through that journey. So initially, we'll talk through where they can find their investors. What kind of investors would be suitable for them? Mm. Is it an angel investor, a VC, or, and where to find them? How to identify those that actually are going to potentially give them money.
Yes.
And so we have then from that point onwards, we take them through the whole corporate finance, how do you set up your company to be investment ready? I mean, very often when we see these companies, their capital structure is a mess because family, friends and fools invested. There's a safe here, and then they've got some options issued to some people. Like a capital structure like that is a dog's breakfast, yeah. And you can't invite professional investors into it.
So they have to unwind that and redesign it to suit the new structure, right?
So we'll give them some basic tools to achieve that through to term sheets, instruments of investment, mm-hmm. at different stages of the business, and how to negotiate them. Mm-hmm. Taking them through the whole how to write an investment memorandum or information memorandum. But I think even things like the pitch, So we will start with a pitch night and all the companies can do their pitch at the beginning. And we'll have all our mentors and investors who will be participating in the program. And then everybody will have their green room moment. And then at the end of the 8 weeks, we'll have an event where they can present the revised pitch.
A refresh.
Yeah. So I think what has been amazing for me, though, Brad, is one is the interest from the companies, but the other, the interest from the investment community to assist. Mm-hmm. Because I think the frustration is on both ends. I mean, we talk to investors and they say, look, they're so far away from what we can do for them that, and we see this all the time where, investors say, they haven't even looked at our website. They don't even know that we don't invest in biotech. So I think those are the little things that you can really help yourself if you want to go out there, be smart about it, save time, save money, and just really be focused about where your money is coming from.
It's preparation meets opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting because in fact what you're doing by doing this collaboration with Tankstream and this program is ultimately solving a problem. You're eating your own dog food.
We are. I hope none of the consultants are upset with us. They're very happy. We're very happy for them to come and assist us to do that because it's a lot of work.
Well, I'm sure it is. But it's in your interest to see that maturity in the marketplace improve. For people to come to you with better readiness is it's actually an effective place to be for Stride. So, where do you hope to be with Stride? What's the plans for Stride? As I know you said, you're taking it, you're being patient, you're being very deliberate around who you invest in, but what does the future look like?
Look, we've got two objectives really that we're building towards at the moment. One is, of course, the public community-based offers, mm-hmm. that we're doing with Mondos, this current offer. But we also built a digital platform for private offers, for syndicates, or, if you're a company, if you want to raise money but you don't want to make it public. Mm. So we built a digital platform where they can just go in there. Like we're doing currently a transaction. They've got existing shareholders that are happy to put in some more money, but they don't have the infrastructure to do all the back end and making sure it's properly managed. They don't have the license to do it. So we'll look after all those things. So we believe that that part of our business could be really important to open up to these emerging angel investor network, because they won't have to worry about the license. They won't have to worry about the infrastructure, the back office, which is always painful. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to grow that. And of course, we would like to grow our community offers as well. And finally, we are going to put together a dedicated micro fund to co-invest with the community investors later on this year.
Lots going on. Lots going on. You're busy. Well, we were talking about juggling things before, weren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
You just came out from a lunch with the Agavan group and the foundation, and ultimately you're on the board there. I want to take a step back and just think about Stride now, but I want to look at it from the lens of what you've learned by being CEO of a listed company, right, for such a long period of time. Now, you talked about that weight coming off your shoulders. What did you learn from that time that is now important for you to embrace moving forward? If you reflect back on that time, you've had lots of leadership, stories, lots of management experiences that would have taught you some lessons, but what are some of the big ones for you that are really important?
So I sat back and said, I came from the lunch, and at the lunch, I ran into a colleague of mine who was also a listed company CEO. And when you meet another listed company CEO, you kind of speak your common language, like you speak the same language. Mm-hmm. And so we just looked at each other and said, yeah, everybody was talking about building a company. I said, well, once you're listed, 40% of your time will be on governance, shareholder communication, et cetera. So running a listed, one of the biggest lessons for me, and I actually knew that before I got the job, and I welcomed this because I really love stakeholder management. I really love bringing people together. I really love communities together. Mm-hmm. So part of that is very much running a public company, because mm-hmm. you've got your different employees, the board, you've got your shareholders, very importantly, your consultants, your advisors, lawyers. Mm-hmm. So there is so many stakeholders you have to manage all the time and juggle and make sure that everybody fits in with the picture. So mm-hmm. when you run a listed company, you're not really running a business. Running a business is a completely different thing to running a listed company.
Yes.
And that's the big lesson was a big lesson. Even though I knew it before, there's no way on earth I could have imagined.
Yeah, so you intellectually know it, but the experience is very different.
It's very, very, the daily experiences of, dealing with the ASX, dealing with the ASIC, all the corporate finance, the governance implications, dealing with your board, those things, you cannot be prepared for unless you do it yourself.
So I think there'll be a lot of people super curious about this now, whether it's because they're just interested in the story or whether they've got ambitions. What were some of the aha moments when you got into those types of scenarios? You're dealing with investors, you're dealing with reporting cycles, you've got analysts on your case, whatever it is you're presenting. What were some of the big aha moments for you?
So look, I was fully aware of my reporting cycles for a start. Mm. I knew my 4Ds, 4Cs, all those things. But to actually go through them and get them on time and then communicate them to the market, that piece is, to me, it was like, wow, it's a completely different experience than what I thought may have been. Mm-hmm. So I think the importance of the market, and that is the importance of your shareholders individually and collectively. I think when you go into this, you don't quite realize that whether someone has one share or a million shares, they will have the same voice, the same rights to talk to you, the same rights to question things. And most of the headaches that I had as a CEO, and I had a few, have come from shareholders who hardly held any shares. Mm. So, and I think it's probably true for most companies that listed companies that your issues as a board or as a CEO come from a very small pool of smallish shareholders. Mm. And so that was huge for me, you know.
Well, what's the – I mean, that's it, so curious, right? It's like dealing with a major customer and then having these, you know, small customers we've decided to take on because that's part of what we do. And, you know, we're almost dealing with two very different levels of sophistication or thought process and culture and all sorts of things when you deal with that from a customer perspective. Now, if we thought about that from a investor perspective, you know, I'd imagine there's a moment where you get frustrated, but there's probably a moment where you're like, oh, this is just what I have to embrace and acknowledge as part of my role. What did you do to do that effectively? Who did you need to be to be effective in that space?
Well, I think I had to give away relying on logic, because people don't invest in your company. Particularly, I mean, I run a biotechnology company. A lot of it was hope about solving a problem, creating a treatment for a disease or developing a diagnostic for cancer or whatever. So there's so much hope built up in amongst shareholders. Mm-hmm. So when things aren't going well, and technology fails generally, mm-hmm. but in that area, technology fails so much more often, you can't use logic. Mm-hmm. And you have to accept that people get very emotional. Mm-hmm. And I just had to get over it. I'm just such a pragmatic, logical person. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't get over initially that they weren't accepting the facts. And then I had to say, what I need to do is really understand them mm-hmm. and accept that these real strong emotions are there and that maybe that's all they want.
Is to be heard.
To be heard. So I can sit there and just listen.
And so, well, and this is the point, right? If the fact is there and the logic's there and that's not the real problem, then the real problem is something else, right?
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
So how does that play out when you think about, I mean, I'm sure there's a degree of mentorship that plays out with some of the people you work with, both internally in your own team and also potentially the founders that you work with. But what are some lessons that you think are useful to give that you've been giving to the people that work around you in your business at the moment? What is it that you think is important for them to develop on?
I don't know whether I can say anything terribly useful, but I'll try. Yeah. look, mentoring goes both ways. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm being mentored every day by my CEO, who's, you know, significantly younger, very much tech focused, and I learned so much about this every day. Mm. Also learned a lot from my mentors who were much older. And from my perspective, I think it's really critical that you teach people that things don't happen immediately. And that I learned a real hard way that patience is probably the most valuable thing that you can learn in business. And as you run up to a period where everything is going wrong and you think that everything collapses around you, that often is the time when you're almost that close to the solution.
To a breakthrough.
To a breakthrough. Mm. So perseverance. Now, I also say that you can't, you shouldn't beat a dead horse. Like, you know, when it's obvious that things don't work, just let go.
Yeah.
And that's another big lesson that, you know, you have to make commercial decisions and sometimes you just have to let go.
Yeah.
You have to move on and do something completely different with a problem. Approach it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very often business is so emotional. Money, as soon as money is on the table, everybody gets very excited. So you have to remove the emotion and you just really have to see the commercial aspects of things and just move on.
Mm. So I love that idea of beating a dead horse. Well, not love the idea of doing it, but the idea of exploring that, because there are so many times where still, it hasn't presented as a dead horse, right? There's a reason we've started doing it and we get hooked into an idea. And you've just talked about patience and you use the word stamina before. And then we go, oh, but you've got to let go at times. What's a good example of something in your career? You don't need to go into the nuance, but some scenarios or situations where you found that you've let go and it's been the best thing. And it was perhaps you were holding on.
Well, I can give you a very specific example. Mm-hmm. So when I took over as CEO of this biotechnology company, the technology that they listed the company on has failed. So we had to kill it. So we've done this, had a new board within 12 months of me taking over, and we've acquired a new asset portfolio. Right. Now, I was very strong on acquiring a strong science, you know, it has to work, even if it's earlier stage. And we managed to acquire something really early, very complex, huge number of publications, fantastic science. And I still believe in the science. But we were trying to raise money. So it was too early for the Australian market. So we were trying to raise money for it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And at the end, we sold it because we just had to let go. And even today, I wish I had that portfolio of assets.
So you wish you didn't let go in theory.
I wish I didn't let go, but I knew in my head.
In the context you needed.
I knew in my head that we will never be able to raise the capital that will be required for a complex scientific portfolio to be fully exploited. And so we let it go. Mm. I sold it, which is okay. It's okay. It's
okay. I sense emotion.
Of course.
what did it, I mean, I'm imagining either advisors or the boardroom table, there's discussions.
Of course.
And you would have had a logic. Did those, I mean, for people that aren't in those boardrooms, because people don't understand boardrooms sometimes, and they're all different, right? Depends on who they're in and all that. But in your experience, is it emotion? Is it rational, those discussions? Where do they go?
Look, the way I manage boards, because you have to manage up and down, and, you know, is I really communicated with my board members individually way before we got to the board meeting. Mm. So my chairman was able to get a really short board meeting done because by the time we got to decision making, I would have discussed the pros and cons with everyone and we would have had. So we had a very stress-free board meetings for many years. And then
fully informed. Yeah. Yeah.
My chairman changed and that whole dynamic changed. And, you know, and I left very soon after. But pretty much the vast majority of my CEO-ship in a listed company, you know, I understood my chairman. That relationship between CEO and chairman is so important. Mm-hmm. It was critical for him that we we solve problems commercially. And I understood that. And I delivered that for him and for the board. And I think, you know, I also was able to really listen because I had fantastic board members for the vast majority of that time. And they were there to assist. So, no, actually, we didn't have a lot of emotion at all. Mm. No, it was I've had really good experience until the very last period of my role there when the chairman changed. Mm. I had a wonderful, wonderful experience with the board that we've been able to be constructive, creative. We had to pivot the company and we've been able to do this. And the board was unified. And so, I'm very grateful for my directors.
Mm-hmm. And do you put that down partially to, you know, you talked about stakeholder management as being really important to you. Do you put that down partially to who they are, but equally how you manage that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think communicating with your stakeholders and understanding what kind of communication they expect. And it's nothing worse for a non-executive director. And I know that because I am a non-executive director. When you rock up there with the board papers, having read them on for the board meeting, and actually the discussion is something completely different that's not in the papers. Mm. And you know, there's some other problem that actually needs to be solved. Like there's nothing wrong, nothing worse than that. Mm. So I felt that it was always really important that I communicate, especially bad news, straight away with the board. Hopefully, I would have thought of some options to resolve it and then work it through with them. And if I felt that one or two of the board members were not on board or they didn't quite understand or needed more information, then I would spend time to do that.
Mm-hmm. You strike me as a no surprises person.
I think so.
Where does that diligence come from? I get the sense that you're very thorough and that a surprise would probably frustrate you as much as you would not want to put a surprise on anyone else.
I think it comes down to respect.
Yeah.
And that is, you respect other people's time. And when you're in a boardroom, you'll be sitting around with people who have very little time. Mm. All of us in this world, the only commodity we have that is absolutely limited, we can't do anything about
time,
is time.
Mm.
So you respect a person or your board members or your constituents, whether whoever it is, that you respect their time. And you don't put them in a position where they have to spend three times as much time to sort out something.
Mm.
And I think it comes down to respect.
Mm-hmm. I think, respect is it's an interesting one. And I think across an entire business ecosystem, it's not always common in all of, for our listeners. People turn up to meetings late. They don't message. They don't communicate. We've started to build a world of a dichotomy between people that have that respect for time and this understanding of the limited resource. Then we've got other people that say, I'll just be in the present, deal with what happens. It's okay. Life will go on. I'd imagine those people don't work very well for you.
Not really. And I started in an era where, I worked with guys much older than me. And one of the power tools was to make you wait. And you knew that they were sitting in the boardroom or they were sitting in their office, but they wouldn't come out for 10 minutes just to make you wait, to show the power balance or lack of. So I am acutely aware of not doing that to people, because I think if you need to play that kind of game with someone, there's something wrong in the dynamic. So then you add all the complexities of business on top of that. How many different things can you manage? I don't have the brain power for that.
I just want to
be straightforward, respect your time, you respect my time. Let's solve this problem.
It's a lovely way to live, isn't it? Just deal with reality.
You don't always manage to do that. It takes two,
Yeah, it takes a couple of people to be like that. I totally agree. You mentioned that power dynamic, and perhaps I don't necessarily want to go there. We can go there if you want, but I'm curious to see if there are any particular mentors that taught you a lot of your career, people that you've looked up to that set a good tone, taught you these. Everyone is born, without knowledge, and they capture it from somewhere or someone. So, who are the people that you've looked up to have really shaped the way or helped you elevate yourself in your career?
Well, that is unusual, but my parents, for a start, both of them actually, my father and my mother, they were very, very different. And I come from rural Hungary. So as you can imagine, I'm coming from a farming background. My mom actually was a homemaker and my dad was ultimately a farmer. So, they teach you some really good basic skills in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things that he taught me is never borrow, which is a terrible thing.
Never borrow. You've broken that rule.
I could be so much wealthier if I just borrowed more money. So never borrow. So those are the things. But so I definitely hold them up as my mentors in life. And they basically gave me the freedom. They recognized early on that I'm very different. They called me a strange thing from the moon in Hungarian. And so, they gave me, the rope to go and do what I need to do. But then when I got to Australia, and I'm not specifically going to call out men because we give them such a hard time, particularly baby boomer men who don't always behave well. And we understand that. And they've created, to a large extent, a power structure that is very difficult to penetrate for women.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some really good ones amongst them. And certainly my chairman from my listed company, Dr. David King, is just one of the most amazing people in a sense that he's an amazing leader, technically, diligent. If needs to be, he's a detailed person. He will read everything, understands everything, and gives you good insight, but at the same time, strategic.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, a good human being. So no matter where you are in the world, whether it's the boardroom, whether it's you're a startup or you're in a farm, you've got to be a good human being.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like your parents instilled that and he instilled that in you, and you've seen that, you've observed that. What's a good human being do?
But sometimes things that I don't do. I get angry with people sometimes. So I have to work on that. And I was very spoiled. And so I had to become a good human being consciously. And this is why it's so important to me right now.
But is getting angry the problem, or is it? What do you mean by that? Tell me more.
Oh, look, I used to have a habit of, you know, I give people a chance, but, you know, they only have one chance. And, you know, I didn't need to forgive anyone, or, you know, it's like, hold on to this. But I realized that I'm only just messing with my own brain. So you just have to let things go. Not, doesn't mean that you have to necessarily go back and, you know, hang out with those people anymore.
Yes.
But just don't give them brain power or brain space. I don't do that anymore if I can help it.
You don't buy into the problem, or don't buy into the anger.
No. So I definitely had to learn that. In terms of, and in just generally relating to people and respecting people and relating to them, understanding where they're coming from. And if you don't understand where they're coming from, try. Because we don't always do, you know, nobody's perfect.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, you talked about juggling and being, you know, sort of vulgar things to think about and work on. And that it takes time to listen. It takes time to be invested in someone, and often we can get it that, you know, into that zone of, well, not enough time, is this actually worth investing in the first place? Like, do you find that that's something you have to, and you talk about being conscious, is that something you're very conscious about given what you've just shared?
I really have to work on that right now. And that's a very interesting question, because it's a bit of a pain point for me right now. In fact, my CEO is saying that we're going to have to create an AI-driven Maria robot who can answer questions, because you keep answering the same questions. So, look, we see a lot of startups, and the lack of skills and knowledge in areas is very similar. Mm-hmm. So we find ourselves, I find myself saying the same mantra over and over again. So it would be nice to have a Maria robot.
Yeah, and to those people that have been on the other side, I'm sure it's not coming from a lack of empathy. You're trying to help them. But
absolutely.
It's a common problem, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, at a startup, your problems are very similar to another startup, and your blind spots are very similar to another startup, unfortunately, particularly when it comes to capital raising. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've gone back to where we started, haven't we? We've gone right back to the startup. We might park that for a minute, but I am curious. You made that comment about, you know, the baby boomer, the male piece. As a, you know, and I'll use the word success in inverted commas, because success is dependent on what you determine to be success. But you've achieved a lot in terms of your career, and being highly impactful and getting through some amazing, challenging things that a lot of people wouldn't or potentially would struggle with. You know, how have you navigated some of those things you've talked around the male power dynamic?
Some of it has been easier and others been harder. Mm-hmm. And I bumped into those issues that I think most women would in a corporate career, certainly. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky, because when I came to Australia, I didn't even know that there was an issue between men and women. I came from socialist Hungary, where women were driving tractors and, you know, taking jobs. So, you know, I didn't give it much thought. Mm-hmm. And happened to, I got my first job by meeting someone in a bar at a party, so I ended up working for five middle-aged men, and they were just doing their thing and I was doing my thing, and they gave me a lot of respect because I was delivering what they were wanting. So, I mean, I really didn't get to think about that too much until I got into investment banking. And there were different avatars in investment banking. So, yes, you had these very senior corporate guys who really understood culture, all those things. And then you had the traders on a desk who may not even have gone to university. And it's not about education so much. It's about emotional intelligence. But education does give you a time to pause in your life where you can reflect on things. And you generally come out of university not capable of working in a job, but certainly capable of thinking if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. So that was that cohort, and really, that private boys' school cohort coming out with an attitude towards women. Now, that hasn't changed much, unfortunately. When I'm reading about the Cranbrook, report, I'm thinking that may not have changed as much as I thought. So, you know, I had to face that as well. And this is something I don't like talking about too much because it goes a little bit personal, but. In short, I've experienced very similar things to other women. Having said that, I didn't make that my life, you know. Mm. You always bump into problems in life. You just solve them. And if you bump into an issue which you can't solve, you move on. Mm. You know, I always had objectives that I wanted to achieve. And I just went and got it done. And sometimes I couldn't. And, you just have to accept that sometimes it's not possible. When I look back at my career, I don't think of it as successful or unsuccessful so far. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of it as far as I'm concerned. But, I haven't become a prime minister. So,
hey, I've got to sort mum's dream out. We've still got time. We've still got time.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's interesting, though, we all have problems. We all come up against different adversities, but you talked about just moving on from it. And resilience is something that you look for in the founders you work with, right? And it's that ability to bounce forward out of a problem. And the rate at which you can do that, the rate you can let go and move forward is probably the indicator of how resilient you are. That's how I look at it personally. What have you learned about bouncing forward and bouncing out of problems?
So before I answer that question, I want to clarify something. I don't think just because I didn't make issue out of the behavior that's unacceptable by men towards women in a workplace, that should be accepted. And I couldn't be happier that today we have so much more freedom about talking about these unacceptable behaviors. So good. I wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, good.
So I'm not suggesting for young women to look the other way and move on. Because today you can raise your voice. There are ways for you to deal with it, and you should.
Totally. And I think it's so important you've said that, right? Because the idea of resilience is not that.
You know, absolutely.
Resilience is the response in dealing with the challenge itself, as opposed to communicating about it. And I think it's so important that we deal with reality by dealing with reality and communicating about what's acceptable and not acceptable.
Exactly.
And champion that.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it wasn't acceptable then, and it's not acceptable now. And when it comes to resilience, it really, I think I see it two parts. There's an emotional resilience where we will all have difficult things happen to us. We all will. That's life. It just keeps throwing at you to see how much you can take. And we just need to accept that that's life. There's beauty in difficulties. And the best things that happen to me are from the worst things that happen to me.
Well, there seemed to be a theme but with both the startups or the founder community and you know, from a health sense, and that removal of suffering, removal of the unnecessary burden. If we can get on top of it, I mean, from a business point of view, the mantra I often use is let's get on with business. Mm. You know, we've got all these blind spots and things that we don't either know about or could be much easier to navigate if there was a little either simplicity or clarity. And equally from the health front.
Totally.
You know, the same idea. How do we simplify? How do we find a way to remove that suffering? That's probably not necessary given how far we're advanced, but there's complexity in implementation, right?
Well, we're not there yet. And I think we've got the right ideas now, and we've got the tools for sure. And we've got big data that we have to manage, because everything comes down to data in that sector, of course. But well, like in almost every sector that we're looking at, I'm just thinking health, but, you know, you open it to any sector and data is the key and how we manage it. So, look, my hope is that we're just going to be able to work much more effectively, collaboratively, and with information flowing much freer than it has been in the past.
Yeah. Let's hope, Maria. Let's hope. Well, Maria, it's been amazing, and I, you know, I think we've navigated through lots of parts of your story, and there's some little aha moments for certain people in listening to what you've shared, both vulnerably and obviously from an experience point of view. It's amazing. Are there any, you know, there's people in this that are listening to this that are, as I say, business owners, entrepreneurs, individuals that are building something or leading teams, very common types of people listening to this. Is there any final words of advice you'd leave that you think for you is today really, really important?
Just go for it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, all the solutions that we'll see for our world's problems don't even exist yet, and we just have to find them. And some of the people that might be listening to this podcast be the people who create those solutions. So, you know, and sometimes it's really difficult to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, but you just have to keep pushing forward because it's somewhere there.
It's somewhere there. Go for it, hey?
Exactly.
Well, Maria, it's been an absolute pleasure. I know you're a busy woman. And I'd like you to, enjoy the rest of your Friday afternoon and hopefully don't get too busy, but really appreciate all you're doing. In terms of the program, just as a final wrap up, how could people potentially hear about that or get involved in that if they're interested?
If people visit our website, which is strideequity.com.au, then they have to find the Sprint program, or just they can just look up the Sprint program. They can also go into my LinkedIn page or the Stride Equity LinkedIn page, mm-hmm. and they'll find information about the Sprint program. Okay. And this is an 8-week program for startup companies to get up to speed of how to get investment ready. And there's some really practical, pragmatic outcomes out of this. And that is they'll have a polished pitch. They have a polished pitch deck out of it and an information memorandum that is probably presentable to investors.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So the Sprint program, we'll put it on the notes as well.
Great.
And make sure everyone can get access to that.
Yeah, if you could get the list, link to it, because Stride Equity is a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah. As simple as possible. Remove the suffering. Remove the suffering.
Please.
Well, Maria, thanks again, and we'll let you to it. But thank you. Really enjoyed today.
Thank you, Brad. It was such a pleasure.